Well, looky here. It's the second podcast ever. Here I sit, working on my house. It's an interesting experience doing this and talking about it. I almost wish I'd done it sooner, through all the different stages. I'm really getting close to being finished. I mean, literally putting the finishes in the house, you know, the flooring, the lighting, the cabinets, all that kind of stuff, getting the walls painted and trim put in, that kind of thing. So I wish I'd done this sooner, just to sort of document it. But I did it. I didn't do it. So I can't go back and wish it for it now. Just, you know, for those of you listening, if you want to do something like this, start it on the front end as opposed to on the back end. I'll try to do it on the next thing I do. But if you're listening, thank you. Thank you for listening to me. Do my little ramble. Today I'm going to give you just sort of what went through my head when I started picking out flooring for my home and what's involved with that. I didn't really get into the installation of it, but there's all kinds of YouTube videos that do much better than that. I'm going to probably give you something that stuff to think about, stuff to chew on in your brain. So again, thanks for coming. I hope you get something out of it. And if you don't, then it is your fault. Hey there. So I'm laying a floor, trying to choose what kind of flooring I wanted to use. I'm talking about hardwood flooring in particular. I'm actually in my master bedroom, and the floor that we wanted to bring throughout the house, we really like the idea of hardwood, and we kind of like the idea of it being sort of rustic in a way. So it's not this pristine, beautiful, shiny hardwood. We got something. We picked out a finish that is a little bit rusticated. It's a little bit beat up. It's a hand-scraped hardwood, 4.5 inch planks. Maybe 5 1/4. I can't remember off the top of my head. Sorry. I've looked at so many. I think it's maybe a 5 1/4. 5 1/4 inch plank hardwood. We wanted it to kind of be a little bit beat up just because we want it to be here for a while. Any floor you pick is probably going to get beat up unless you just sort of live with marshmallow feet and no pets and no visitors or kids or anything like that. You know, and that's not how we live. So we know this floor is probably going to get beat up. So let's pick a floor that's already a little bit beat up and embraces that so that when we do drop something on it, which is inevitable, or we do scrape it or do whatever, it doesn't jump out at you like a sore thumb. It can withstand a little bit of patina. So, you know, when you're picking out a hardwood floor, there's some things you need to think about a little bit. One is, what look do you want? You know, there's a lot of looks you can get. You can get a very pristine type of flooring in terms of it's a smooth finish with a high gloss. And you know, if you pick it sounds counterintuitive, but like if you pick a dark floor with a high finish, it's going to be very reflective. It's going to sort of recede versus a light floor. You know, sort of a blonde looking weathered wood or those kinds of things, you know, that stuff's going to show up. But then also, if you pick a wood, if you pick a finish that's going to be where the color is very uniform throughout, there's not a lot of variety of grain that comes through the floor. So you have sort of this very uniform color, uniform finish, then it really looks nice. If it's kept up clean, if you live in a manner where you're obsessive about your cleaning and dusting and those kinds of things, and you live a very simple life where, you know, you don't have a lot of hectic things going on where you're not going to mess that floor up, then man, I really love those floors. It's just not the way we live. Because if you have, especially with a dark floor, if you have a dark floor and it gets dusty, you know, you have a corner that just collects dust somewhere, or you drop something on it, or you track something on your feet or your dog, or there's hair or whatever, things end up on the floor, right? Well, those things really just leap out at you. Wow, your eyes go directly to them. Something's on the floor. However, if you have a finish, and everyone knows what I'm talking about here, if you have a finish that has a lot of variety of color and texture and pattern, then those things get camouflaged a little bit. So, you know, if you drop a, you know, if you drop a nail or something, or I don't know, if you drop something that you want, a little screw, it may be a little harder to find, but then again, that's sometimes a good thing because, you know, you don't notice the imperfections of your life quite so much. That's all I'm saying. So that's color and texture. Size of plank is really just a preference, you know. There's a lot of variety of that. What really the big determining thing about choosing a floor is really about what type of floor do you want to get? And the types I'm talking about is, do you want to do a solid hardwood, which is typically about 3/4 of an inch, a little bit less, a little bit more at certain times, but typically a solid hardwood floor is going to be a 3/4 inch floor. And their tongue and groove, where that means there's a little piece that sticks out called the tongue. And that little tongue fits inside a little groove called, you guessed it, a groove. And that helps it to lock together. And you nail through the groove, and that holds in the tongue. Or is it the other way around? You nail through the tongue. I apologize, I said that wrong. You nail through the tongue, and then that fits up against the groove. So, and that really holds your floor down. And it looks great, and it sounds good. It sounds solid, and it's what most people think of when they think of hardwood floor. And that's a great floor. There's no doubt about it. It is an awesome floor. If you can afford it, I say get that, because a solid hardwood floor is going to last for years. Consequently, if you don't like the finish, let's say 20 years from now, you decide, you know what, this color I picked is just a pain in the butt, or it's beat up and I need to refinish it. You come in with a sander. I mean, it's a process, no doubt about it. You got to move your furniture out and you got to have someone who really knows what they're doing. But they can come in with a sander and literally refinish your floor in a week or less. You got to get furniture out of the room, and that's a whole nother process. But for the most part, in terms of the actual finishing on the floor, you can refinish a floor. And you can do that dozens and dozens of times. Not that you'd want to, but you could. So that is probably the most forgiving, the most lasting, the most opportunistic of all floors. It gives you a lot of opportunities. You can get floors that are pre-finished, where it already has the stain and the urethane and all that kind of stuff on it, which is really great. They do it in a factory. It's super, super, super hard and really uniform and done really, really well. Or you can buy the raw wood and have them sand it in place and finish it on site. That works really good too, but you got to have someone that knows what they're doing. And then the other thing that's becoming much more popular these days, just because they've finally kind of perfected it, and that is what's called an engineered floor. Now, engineered floor does not use solid pieces of wood. It uses veneers of wood, or in my case, bamboo, which bamboo inherently is engineered. No matter if you get any kind of bamboo floor, it's engineered, because bamboo doesn't come in planks. You gotta slap it together with some kind of bonding agent. Now, they've improved the bonding agent so that they don't warp and those kinds of things, and they're water resistant, and they're moisture resistant, and they're UV resistant, and all those kinds of things. So that's what made engineered floors much better. But engineered floors are often a lot cheaper, because that expensive hardwood that you want, it doesn't necessarily have to go all the way through 3/4 of an inch into the floor. You really only need a small little bit of it, like 1/8 of an inch, that sits on top of the floor. And underneath is an engineered product like plywood. Now, something to consider. A lot of people think about hardwood, solid hardwood, like solid hardwood furniture. I don't want any plywood in my furniture. I get it. I understand where that comes from. And in many ways, I share that. However, the idea behind it is... there's a lot of ways you can look at it. I'm just going to say the way I feel about it, okay? I look at engineered wood, which is plywood, OSB, particle board, those kinds of things. They get a bad rap, rightly so. They get a bad rap because the glues and the things that they used when they first started making those products were horrible. You get water on them, it swells up, it falls apart, it just turns into sawdust. Or they use really noxious chemicals, a lot of formaldehyde and those kinds of things that leach out into air and can become very dangerous. That stuff has changed. It's changed dramatically. So now the engineered woods, the plywoods, the particle boards, those type of things, the wafer boards, those things have improved to a degree that it is very it's very stable. I'm trying to think of the right word. It's a very stable product these days. And let's talk about stability for a second. If you have hardwood that's grown in a tree, right? If you cut a tree across its middle and you're looking down, it's a circle. You got all the rings of the tree, right? If you look at it really close, if you look at it with a microscope or even with just a magnifying glass, you can see these little tiny little circles, almost like little straws. And it really is what it's like. Those are the fibers of the tree, and they go along the length of the tree, like from root to limb, okay? They run that direction of the tree. And an entire tree is made up of these little tiny straws, and that's really where the strength is. The stuff that holds the straws together is a lot weaker than the other part. So that's why you can split wood one direction, it's real easy. And if you try to do it the other way, it's really hard because you're cutting across those fibers as opposed to cutting with those fibers, just splitting those fibers apart from one another. So if you cut a board out of that, the length of the board's really strong. And if you look at the cross section of it, you know, where you kind of still see the rings a little bit, that is the weaker direction. And you'll notice that if you leave a piece of wood out in and let it get wet or just get moisture, or even when you cut a piece of wood and the moisture that's in the wood leaches out of it, because inevitably that's what happens. That's what kiln drying is to kiln drying wood is actually putting it in a little hot box and forcing that and stacking it up. It's under pressure so it doesn't move around very much, and then forcing that water out of it. That's what kiln dried wood is. So it's more expensive. There's another process to it. But wood inevitably always is either gaining moisture or losing moisture. It's in a constant state of that, of gaining moisture, losing moisture. And as you do that over the years, especially let's say there's a water leak somewhere, or there's a place where the dog pees, or there's a place that's more prominent for spills, or it's in a place that underneath your crawl space gets a lot of moisture, or it's in a room or even adjacent to a room that gets a lot of moisture, those boards are going to absorb moisture and then lose moisture. And when it does that, when it absorbs moisture, it swells, right? Makes it bigger. When it loses moisture, it shrinks. So you get this constant state of shrinking and swelling and shrinking and swelling. And then temperature does the same thing to it. So on a solid hardwood board, you have a greater tendency for those things. If you've ever seen a floor that's been there sometimes or even had water damage, you can tell some of these boards kind of have like little bumps, little humps in them and little dips in them. The little dips are called cupping and the little humps are called crowning. So you'll have a variety of crowning and cupping depending on just what the grain structure is inside that particular board. Every board's different. And so there's really nothing you can do about it except just come back and just sand the whole thing down to a part that is, you know, if you have a floor that suffers from that, you really can't do anything about it. Either replace it or sand the whole thing down and refinish it so it's flat again, and try to keep the moisture out of it. However, if you have an engineered floor is made up of wood, little chunks of wood fibers, and those fibers go all kinds of different directions. You know, that's what gives it its strength, is the variety of strength direction. And so that plywood is going to be very stable. It's always going to be getting and gaining and losing moisture, just like every other piece of wood. However, because those fibers go in every direction, it sort of shrinks and swells uniformly, as opposed to, you know, shrinking in the middle and not on the outsides, thus causing cupping or crowning. So an engineered floor is a lot more stable over the long run. Okay, and there's even then the engineered floor has a strength in both directions, whereas a typical solid hardwood floor only has strength in one direction. So if you get a solid hardwood floor, most of the places that warranty their floors, they will void the warranty if you do not go perpendicular to the direction of the floor joist. It sounds weird. You got floor joist, you got plywood, and then you've got this is called subfloor, and then you put the floor on top of that. If you're running your floor the same direction as the joists, then oftentimes, and there's a failure and they come out to inspect and you're going to try to use your warranty, and they go, oh, wait a minute, these boards are running the same direction as your floor joist. They're going to say, I'm sorry, we can't back that up. They usually will void their warranty if you have solid hardwood floor and run it with it. So you don't have any say as to the direction of the hardwood. You know, we're going to run it this way, this direction, we're going to run it that direction. You have to run it across your joists just because of strength. Whereas in an engineered floor, you don't necessarily have to do that. You can run it really any direction. However, I still recommend to running it across your joists, running it across perpendicular to your joists. I still do that even with engineered floor, even though oftentimes you don't necessarily have to. So those are sort of the ins and outs of hardwood flooring, solid versus engineered. The other thing you need to consider is going to be a tongue and groove, which I kind of described earlier, or if you're going to use some sort of a click lock. It's called a floating floor. Click lock, what that means is there are these specifically designed grooves that stick out, sort of a still kind of a tongue and groove, except it's a tongue and groove that locks together, and so you don't really need nails. There's a lot of advantages to this in that floor is not the floor that you walk on is not actually mechanically, physically attached to the subfloor that sits underneath it that holds it up. So that means that those things can shrink and swell at different rates, and thus you're less likely to have a piece of hardwood that kind of wants to pop up, or a place that opens up between two joints on hardwood. You're just not going to have that really anywhere, because those things shrink and swell at a uniformity weight if you have a floating floor. You can also have what's called glue down, which I don't really like that. Oftentimes glue down is used over plywood. Of course, over concrete, like in a basement, but you don't necessarily, you got to be really careful with using that. You got to make sure you pick a hardwood that actually can be applied to concrete, that it will be stable, because you still have moisture wicking through concrete from the ground, just ground moisture that's just under your house. Just the dirt itself will, you know, you'll have what's called water vapor coming through. It's got to be really careful with that. Even with engineered floor, you definitely do not want to do a solid hardwood floor over concrete unless it just doesn't sit on the concrete and you got a place for that moisture to kind of collect and breathe out around the, sitting on what's called sleepers, where the hardwood slit sits off the floor. Only getting that too deep, but you got to be really careful about what kind of hardwood you're going to put over concrete. My hardware that I picked on my floor, my hardwood that I picked for our floor is, like I said, I think it's a 5 1/4, and it is only 3/8 inch thick, which honestly, I was sort of looking for a 1/2 inch thick, which is good, but it just has a little bit more solid sound to it. 3/8 is really good too, though. The reason I was wanting to go a little bit thicker originally was because when I built it, it took me a long time to get it built. I framed it all by myself. And so the joists and the floor was exposed to weather for a length of time. And I knew that was going to be the case. So I purposefully did not use what's called LVLs. I'm sorry, not LVLs, TJIs, which are basically an engineered flooring joist. You've seen them like little wooden I-beams. Those are called TJIs, and those are engineered flooring products, which are really good. They're super flat. They're very uniform. They look really great. They give you a really strong floor, a really flat floor. However, you can't get them wet. If you get them wet, they're going to shrink and swell and fall apart, and you just don't want that to happen. So I use solid lumber. Solid lumber is really great. I love it. Problem with solid lumber, just like I was explaining earlier, sometimes you'll have some cupping or bending or the boards will bend a little bit. So sometimes you might have some high spots and low spots in the floor, which I knew was going to be the case. And I've tried to mitigate those as much as possible with leveling agents and things to kind of keep the floor flat. But I still knew that there was going to be some imperfections into the flatness of the floor. So I wanted to use a little bit heavier. I probably should use a 3/4 inch, but I just wasn't in the budget for our house, for this house. And not just that, but the idea of having a much less expensive floor. So let's say our floor, I can get our floor materials, our flooring itself, the hardwood, for about $2.50 a square foot. It's fairly inexpensive. It's a 3/8 inch stuff material. And it is a bamboo. I'll explain bamboo in a minute. If I'd have gone with hardwood, and by the way, it's a click lock. I can install it myself. It's pretty simple, a little bit time consuming, but goes fairly quick. Still probably quicker than doing a tongue and groove where you got to nail it through the floor. That's the other thing. I did not want it attached to the floor because at some point in time, we're probably going to want to change it, like completely change it. So I can completely rip this floor up. My subfloor is exactly what it was before I went and put it down. It doesn't have any problems at all. There's not nail holes in it. I'm not having to pull nails out of it. It's not all messed up from the hundreds and hundreds of pounds of nails that goes into holding that hardwood floor. I literally can pull the other one out, put a new one in, and I'm not worried about it. So that was a big, big reason why I went with an engineered click lock floor. And then the 3/8 inch is adequate. Would have preferred a little bit thicker, but it's adequate. It works for me. I don't really plan on refinishing it. I could probably just replace it cheaper than I could refinish it, even if I was doing a solid hardwood floor. So that was another, you know, factoring long term. I do plan to be here for a long time. If I was just going to be here and sell it, I might make different decisions. But we're going to be here a while, so if we want to change the floor up, we can do it fairly affordably. So you know. Everyone's needs are a little bit different. There are so many different, so much different flooring out there. One other thing that is afforded by using an engineered floor, man, there are so many different types of materials out there that's affordable and different colors and patterns and textures. I will warn you maybe against going with something really trendy. Because trends come and go, and you never really know when they're going to go. And then when they go, you look back, go, man, what was I thinking? If you don't believe me, look back at your eighth grade pictures when you were in eighth grade and go, man, what was I thinking? What kind of hair was that? Or even high school, depending on how old you are, things come and go. And you don't want that in your house. Your house lasts a lot longer than the trends do. So I want to pick something that's going to last for a while. So I went with a bamboo flooring. I'm trying to be fairly ecologically sensitive with my home. So this bamboo flooring, if you use a solid hardwood floor, the size of the tree required, depending on the species of tree, but typically a tree has to grow about 40 years to become large enough, thick enough, have enough trunk space in it to really be efficient and getting lumber for hardwood. Consequently, you know, there's a lot of waste that comes out. It's part of why hardwood is so expensive, is because there's a lot of stuff that can't be used. It just isn't appropriate. I mean, it has knots in it, it has holes in it, it has got worms in it, it's got whatever. It has this sort of, it's these imperfections that have to be culled out. And thus what's left is very small compared to everything that gets culled out. So, there's just a lot of resources. It's a resource-intensive flooring material, whereas bamboo is an engineered material, and the size of the bamboo, depending on the species that they use, it takes 5 years. You know, bamboo is a grass, so in 5 years, this grass can grow at a height and thickness and whatever that is appropriate for them to then sort of. I don't know exactly the whole process, but I'm assuming to kind of. Melt down into a material that they can be used for kind of combined into a veneer, sometimes even a solid hardwood. California, I forget what it's called, Cali Floors actually, has a really good solid bamboo floor. But with that, it's super hard. Now, people think about hardwood, they think about oak, you know, that kind of thing, mahogany, ipe. Those are really, really hard woods, super, super hard. Doesn't even hold a candle to some of the strand bamboo. I mean, like, some of the bamboo is like twice, three times as strong as the hardwood floors. And what I mean by strength is it's impact resistant. So, you know, let's say you drop a, let's say you drop a bucket full of something. You're cleaning out your fish tank and you're changing out your pebbles. So you got a big old 5 gallon bucket that probably weighs 90 pounds to 100 pounds and it slips out of your hand, drops on the floor. It can completely crush and leave a huge round mark into your hardwood floor, in which case it's going to be really hard to get out of there. You're just going to have to live with it. Whereas bamboo, it's probably going to resist it. It is, it's really super hard. It's impressively hard. So using bamboo in mind, but there were dozens and dozens and dozens of other material options that I could have used, looks and colors and finishes and textures and all kinds of cool stuff. So an engineered floor, I guess you can, I guess it sounds like I'm promoting the engineered floor, which I guess I am, is that there's just a lot more options. The materials are now a lot more stable. They are now super hard and a lot more affordable and a lot easier to put in, which consequently, if you're having someone install it, is a little cheaper to put it in. So there's a lot of savings on that end as well. Whatever you choose, just make sure that it's something that you like. It's going to coordinate with your style. That's going to be useful, not just something that looks good in a catalog or on the shelf. You know, what I encourage people to do is lay it on the ground and look at it in light. You know, looking at it on a piece of board holding it in your hand is one thing, but you rarely get that close to the floor. You're usually standing 5 feet off the floor or a little bit less, depending on your height. And look at it from that distance and look at it as a floor surface. Cause you know, if you have a lot of, it's going to be reflective, you know, you need to figure out what your finish is going to be, how you're going to use it, how you're going to use it in your house, how you live in your house. You know, is it crazy and dogs and kids and mud and stuff? It's always going to have to be cleaned up. Pick a floor that's going to accommodate that versus a floor that, that you're always having to maintain and fix and wipe and mop and clean, that kind of stuff. So just be very cognizant of those things when you choose a floor. I hope this has been helpful and not just rambling. I'm Christopher. Hey, we did it. We got through another podcast. Thanks again for listening. It's a fun experience. I hope you got something out of it. I definitely get stuff out of it when I talk to people about it. So I think that's the benefit of conversation, of dialogue, that give and take. Even though I'm giving, you're not giving back, I can still kind of feel it. So hope you enjoyed it. Next time, go out and do something.